Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. We do our best to bring to you, the listener, some of the most interesting people and topics that, and how do we help understand the complicated world that we all live in cybersecurity. So got a great episode today, one that really strikes home to me. I'm one of the few Mac users here at the Center for Internet Security and have been actually an Apple user since the Apple II Plus. So you can tell you how far back I go with this kind of stuff. So we're going to talk today about a really interesting topic. And also, I think this will help illuminate the use of CIS benchmarks and some of the ways we make this content available to others and some of the complexities of this kind of thinking. So with that, two guests, Bob Gensler from NIST. Bob, could you take a moment and introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Thank you, Tony. I'm Bob Gensler from NIST. I work on the operations side on the Mac team here at NIST, help managing the couple thousand Macs that we have. But I am also the sort of the de facto project lead for the macOS security compliance project. And you mentioned using since the Apple IIe days. So my first Mac or my first Apple, I should say, was we got an Apple IIgs. Oh. And I have behind me on my wall a signed by Woz Apple IIe.
Oh, man. I'm a fanboy. You. By the way, I have a 2GS in my basement, still operating. So you bring legit credentials and an autograph from the Woz. I'm so jealous. And our second guest today is from the Center for Internet Security, Edward Byrd. Edward, introduce yourself to our audience, please.
Hi, Tony. My name is Edward Byrd. I am part of the benchmarks team here at the Center for Internet Security. You know, I work with, the macOS community with security. Now, I don't have the bona fides that both of y'all do. My first Mac was actually a Mac. It was an iBook G3. Wow. My wife loves to use old technology to do stuff, so do I. But, you know, she actually wrote part of her PhD dissertation on on the G3 iMac because it was just fun.
Okay. So you bring plenty to the game here, Edward, so thank you. But it also, you know, takes us back to a simpler time when machines were much less complicated. And you know, one of the first work machines I had was an IBM PC, one of the first that the U.S. government had, where you could buy the source code, right, the listing for the BIOS. You know, in theory, right, a person could understand the machine, like a 2 plus, a 2e, those machines. And, you know, the complexity today, right, you know, I was struggling to write code that would fit in 4K EEPROMs, and now like memory is unlimited and disk space is, you know, you can feel free to waste it. So, let me start with you on this, because I'm sure a number of our listeners have never worked at the level of detail that you do in terms of benchmarks. What's different about the Mac OS as a target for a CIS benchmark?
Well, so it's not Windows. So that's the first thing. I know that sounds dumb, but when people look at security, they think, oh, well, there's Windows, there's other, you know, there's some Linux on servers and stuff, but the macOS has become such a large part of desktop compute that, you know, you have to actually secure them. They're not bulletproof like people, you know, I'm sure I said they were pretty much bulletproof at one point too. So, you know, it's a common misconception. While they are a Unix-based operating system, and they have the security of that along with it, you still need to take the time to harden the device, because Apple sets some good things, but there's a lot more things that need to be set to make sure that you're protected, that ports aren't open and things like that. So the CIS benchmark comes along where we are doing that hard work to dig into the settings, to dig into configuration options, and test out and see, okay, what actually does support what you need? You know, we could put in a lot of random recommendations that don't actually do anything. We've tried to get rid of a lot of those because there were some in the past that just, as that time changes, they're not needed anymore. But that's where the CIS benchmark comes in with macOS, is that there are additional security steps that need to be taken. Just for, honestly, I believe there's some that are for everyone, not just for, you know, enterprise use or business use. I think that there are several recommendations we have that, you know, I would tell, you know, anyone that I know who has a Mac, from, you know, a 10-year-old running a MacBook Air to, you know, my 7-year-old father-in-law, who I think he is still running a a Core 2 Duo unibody MacBook Pro. He just won't give it up. So,
well, never mess with success. Yeah, thanks. So, Bob, introduce us to the open source project. So, how did this start?
Sure. So, the macOS Security Compliance Project is an open source effort and a collaboration initially started between a few government agencies, NIST, NASA, DISA, their joint service provider group. And we all had to do this anyway because the new operating system ships. You have to secure it. At the time, maybe Edward was not around, and the CIS benchmarks would sometimes take like a year. DISA STIGs would take, you know, almost a year. So we were left with a problem of new operating system, sometimes new hardware that couldn't be downgraded, and last year's security guidance from these respective organizations. So we decided to just start doing it out basically in the open and collaboratively. And as time's gone on, we've sort of joined forces with Edward and CIS. Because to be honest, a lot of people want CIS. It's somewhat the easy button, but in a good way, right? Like in the NIST world, right? Everything is an organizationally defined value of screensaver and this and that and the list of settings that you want. CIS has made that organizationally defined value for people. And so it is. It's sort of an easy button to follow compliance in order to protect their organizations, right? Compliance is not necessarily security. It's protection for the organization, that extra insurance, that they've gone that extra mile to help make sure that things are locked down in the way. Anyway, that gets off topic, off tangent a little bit with it, but yeah, it's an open source effort to programmatically be able to secure systems, basically, and catalog of settings and the compliance benchmarks that they map to.
No, I think approximately what year do you recall, Bob, when this started for you?
Well, we started it actually in late summer of 2019. And then we went public with it June of 2020 with a sort of beta or 0.9 release. And then our real first release was that fall in 2020. So here we are. It's early 2026. We're coming up on our 6th anniversary of it. And yeah, rocking and rolling.
Yeah, great stuff. Edward, just out of curiosity, because I don't know the answer, when did the CIS benchmark for macOS originate? Do you remember that?
The CIS.
So,
We found it in 10.3 and stuff.
Yeah, actually, I know there's a couple recommendations that are still in the benchmark from 10.8. In Workbench, the oldest one I could have downloaded, we've archived those since then, was 10.6.
Yeah, I mean, just to let you know, I have some history with this kind of stuff, from my work at the National Security Agency, and the very late 90s, early 2000s was the emergence of this, this need, right? Enterprises recognize, oh my gosh, it's complicated technology. We can't take it straight out of the box because it's, by design, it's left wide open. And this idea, and you guys have really have been continuing the notion here, is that, none of us has enough expertise.
Right.
We absolutely, whether government, private sector, it just doesn't matter. And most of what we need to do is in common. So better to share labor up front, right? Share ideas and so forth.
Exactly.
I don't know if you ever heard the story, but in the early 2000s, we actually ran an experiment. It would happen to be in cooperation with NIST and Mirza Supaya, who I think was recently
yes.
retired. But the idea was he compared all the first generation of security guides for Windows 2000. And at that time, you know, it was CIS, DISA, STIGS, NIST checklist, did they call them?
The USGCB.
Right. And the Microsoft High Security Option and several other things that were all floating around. And I call that the grand experiment. It was a 9-hour meeting for us to realize 90%+ of the settings were the same.
For sure.
Or there was no intellectual basis for how long should someone time out after so many number of bad patches. It was like folklore.
Yes.
So I said, pick the middle one. If no one has a better answer, pick the middle one, because, you know, they're all within range, right? And if we can't defend it, either pick the most conservative or pick one and to say, we'll agree. And let's focus on, you know, how we apply it later, right? Because every enterprise has to deal with policies and regulation and frameworks and all that, that sort of stuff. So I think it's a great cause that you guys are on here. But what about the community that's built up around the open source project, Bob? I mean, is it pretty representative of the ecosystem of Mac users?
Yeah. So, I mean, it started with those groups. And then we have collaborations from Jamf, who is the number one Mac management solution, CIS, obviously. We actually have DISA now, the folks who do the DISA STIG. So every week we have NIST, DISA, and CIS discussing, right? Like you said, the same settings, more or less, but agreeing and working together. It's cats and dogs. And we have folks from Los Alamos Lab and some of the other national labs that are on the calls. So it's really grown into something, as well as now international contributions from Dutch and German.
Yeah, I just think it's such a great activity. But talk about the relationship though with CIS, and how the open source project relates to the work that you guys do to produce supported products.
The biggest thing is that it just expands the community. You know, one thing that I did when I started here at CIS is I wanted to grow the macOS community. We had two people who met on a regular basis with our previous lead, Eric, who Eric does everything. He's over all the Linux. So he barely had time to do all that, let alone run macOS world as well. And we wanted to grow the community because that's how you find out, you know, I have a specific background. You know, my background is higher education. You know, I know a lot of security settings for that, but I don't know what a financial institution needs. So you want to, you know, or government or et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to grow that community. So as we grew that, we started hearing about the security compliance project. And then one of the members who was at NASA at the time reached out and said, hey, you want to hear about this? And I was like, yes, I do. That's actually the first time I met Bob was on that call. And I was like, okay, you all are doing a lot of the stuff that I'm doing. We're setting things differently. And I don't mean the final setting was different, but you know, we're using different commands to get to the same endpoint. Well, that's dumb. You know, we started talking about it, and you know, we started meeting on a regular basis and showing the community, hey, we aren't just trying to silo ourselves. We're trying to branch out to make, sounds kind of dumb, but just make things more secure. You know, that was the goal. You know, what is the old Microsoft desktop computer on every desk? You know, we wanted to make all those computers a little bit more secure as long as they were Mac. You know, someone else could do the Windows stuff and Linux. But, you know, that was the impetus, was they're doing a lot of great stuff. I think we're doing great stuff. But why do we put in double the work when we can work together and, you know, figure things out and give a cohesive, you know, singular recommendation? Instead of, you know, well, CIS says to set it this way. Well, MSCP says this for you know, 853, but the STIG says this. And, you know, it just seemed, you know, we needed to streamline that.
Yeah, the observation we had back in the day, and you guys have really taken it up 10x, it was that, you know, if we're all giving different recommendations for whatever reason, now we force the user community to like, well, who do I trust more? You know, it's an unwinnable position that we put people in. But none of us, and this, again, I worked at Big Bad NSA with, you know, pretty big workforce and lots of money. We didn't have enough expertise to look at all these things or to keep up with it. And I think what a lot of folks underestimate is the cost of keeping up, right? Anybody can gather, not anybody, but lots of folks can gather a room full of people, argue, and produce a one-time shot. But a sustainable project like you guys have built, that's a big deal, right? You got to keep people's interests and attention and commitment, both by the individuals and their management over a period of time. Listen, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll be right back. And Bob, we're going to come back to you next for your perspective on this, you know, partnership. Ever feel like cybersecurity is a giant jigsaw puzzle and someone forgot to give you the corner pieces?
All the box lid, the table, all the time.
Exactly. That's where the CIS Secure Suite platform comes in.
It's your intuitive starting point for cybersecurity. One dashboard with the functionality of SysCap Pro dashboard and CIS CSET Pro built in.
From policy to implementation, it puts the puzzle together for you. CIS controls, check. CIS benchmarks, double check.
And it's built for CIS Secure Suite members. You're getting a streamlined experience with the guidance that turns data into decisions.
Like seeing where your biggest risks are and knowing exactly what to do next. Share results easily with internal security teams from one great tool.
Plus, it helps you align with frameworks like NIST and ISO, making you audit ready.
Whether you're a small team or a cyber underdog, the platform gives you the visibility, clarity, and confidence to act.
So if you're ready to stop guessing and start securing, visit cisecurity.org/securesuite to learn more.
CIS Secure Suite Platform. Cybersecurity simplified. Okay, we're back, and we'll come back to this topic and get Bob's perspective on this, the role and the interaction with CIS benchmarks, but also this larger community of people who share expertise and produce content. It's just such a great story, Bob.
Yeah, so something that Edward kind of mentioned, not knowing what like a financial or this customer, I think that has been one of the strengths of the macro security compliance project. Is if you notice when I introduced myself, I didn't say first I'm the project lead of, I'm in operations. This is what I have to do. This is what I live and breathe, right? And that's a big reason why I stay on top of it. And then I can, and it's right. I'd have to do this anyway. So I might as well just do all of this in Git commits and changes like that. We build myself, Dan Brzezinski, Alan Goldbig from Jamf, like we are building tools that we want. And that's what, right? Other people use it, great. I mean, it has been other people are using it, but we're building something that we want to be able to use because we have to do it as well. But in growing, I think this did help CIS grow because, right, your meetings went from two people, the Friday community call went from two people to now it's like a couple dozen sometimes. Or a dozen or something, right? Like
we got up to 35 is the largest we had at one time.
Yeah. So, right. Like, it's showing people that it's not just a group of wise men sitting in a room deciding these settings and that they can be part of this community. I think, and not just that, now we get issues open that are really CIS issues on the project, and that brings it to CIS, right?
And vice versa. We get somewhere open in Workbench, and instead of going, well, that's somebody else, we work together.
Yeah. And the same goes for DISA, right? They might get some things here and there as well that then feed to CIS. It's all a big circle that's been helping each other. So really now the entire Mac compliance world, it all feeds around the same circle because we're all setting things the same way. And we've tried our best to stay the most recommended way from Apple.
The point you made, Bob, and you know, Edward's experience is right in line with that, right? This is an operational issue. This is not an academic exercise of let's tighten everything down, you know, to make it unusable. Because this trade-off between usability for an enterprise, you know, this sort of in these circumstances, it's security is not going to be a you must be this tall to ride this ride kind of a thing, right?
Right.
There are trade-offs. And, you know, I grew up in a world of legacy applications, complicated partnerships, systems that were running through satellites into tents in the desert and everything in between. And it takes this operational experience is what you need to bring to it to say, okay, but what are we trying to accomplish with a security setting? Is there another way we do it that doesn't disrupt, for example, legacy applications that we can't afford to rewrite right now or those kinds of things? And that's the real life that I think we all have to deal with here. And I think, so Edward, I got to ask you a loaded question. What about your role with the Center for Internet Security as a computing enterprise? Please tell me that I'm using the Mac benchmark here.
We are.
True.
Okay. We are using, yes, the level one benchmark.
Excellent.
And actually, a lot of the level two as well. There's just some specific things because I work with our IT department. It isn't just I throw something out there and they go do something. You know, working in a community isn't just, you know, what we do to write the benchmark. We want to do it within, you know, what is it? Eat your own dog food.
Well, at CIS, we prefer to say we drink our own champagne. Because dog food is still dog food. Our stuff is bad. Our stuff is good. Right? So it's desirable.
Well, now to be fair, our dogs will get like regular, like filet mignon or whatever, whatever we're cooking. Right. Whatever's on the plate.
And sweet potato and avocado.
All right. Exception accepted.
Yeah. that's the good stuff. No, I agree. Champagne is
all right. No, that's one. But this idea again of we're, this is an operational feedback loop, right? We learn from operations to improve CIS benchmarks, you know, this particular project and vice versa. The other thing I'll mention, you know, Bob, you mentioned the, really bumping up the size of the community that contributes to a CIS benchmark. You know, I often tell people and anecdotally, you know, using a benchmark, whether it comes from CIS or through this project, you're getting the expertise of people you cannot afford to hire. You can't even find them, right? Because this is a particularly scarce skill.
Yeah, and that is something like one of the hugest benefits of the compliance project to cut you off. Anybody from a K-12 to a Fortune 500 company, it allows them to meet their compliance without, right? You could be that library admin who is the librarian plus the Mac admin, or you could be that $1 million Mac admin. You are able to secure your machine the same way and easily using the Mac OS Security Compliance Project. It evens the field in a sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, most of our economy, right, by pretty much any measure, is never going to hire someone like one of you two. They can't find you. They can't afford you. There's not enough sort of daily work there, but they need the expertise. And the goal here is to capture it, right, in products like we're discussing here. And make it accessible and to recognize, you know, and this is, you know, today we think of this as normal, but in the early days of this, many of our security frameworks were based upon the idea that everyone is special and unique, right? We're all special snowflakes. Oh, the risk appetite of your managers is different. You need a risk management framework before you can select your controls and blah, blah, blah. And the breakthrough in thinking is, hey, you know, we actually have more in common than we do that's different. And so at least as a starting point, right, community-developed content like a macOS benchmark is incredibly powerful. And as a universal sort of expectation, that seems like the right model. It allows those who cannot afford the kind of talent that you represent really access to the same value, right, the ability to defend themselves against the kinds of attacks that are just going to plague them every day. Edward, any insight into the user community that you support? So Bob said K-12 through giant enterprises. Is that true for CIS also?
Very much so. Just to give you an idea on our call, obviously we have a lot of government people. Bob's on our calls every time. We have representation from state and local governments. We have federal government. We have higher education, K-12. We have people in fintech. We have a couple startup people that are, they're just trying to, they're in engineering. That's the best way to put it. We have large global corporations of sending people to join the call. And, we have you know, one or two person shops that just are interested.
And I know there's people from overseas that join. You have a CMMC auditor who joins just to make sure that everything's working nicely with that. Yeah.
No, and recognizing, again, these security recommendations are not abstractions, right? They're meant to be used, and they're used by this community, you know, auditors, overseers, frameworks, admins, you know, technical people, and so forth. But, now, I wanted to ask you, Bob, about the word compliance.
Yeah.
And why you chose that, and what does that mean to the folks that take advantage of the work that gets done?
Yeah, so I mean, we really started out as mainly doing 853, so that's pretty much why compliance was the thing, the name in it. But yeah, like I kind of said earlier, compliance doesn't necessarily equal security, but it equals assurance that you've tried your best, in a sense, to protect the organization's data.
Yeah, and this assurance was a word that popped up. You know, I know the guy at the Pentagon who claims to have originated the use of the term assurance, right? Information assurance back in the day. But what he was trying to apply is what you were saying, Bob, which is we're not trying to get to some mythical absolute state of security.
Right.
We're trying to have confidence that we can provide services to citizens or that we can conduct business, right? We accept that it's an imperfect world, but I still have to operate a business. And I have to have some level of confidence so I can make decisions. And so, again, part of the process here is this transparency, right? Hey, you want to have confidence in the CIS benchmark? If you have the talented person, send them to the meeting, right? They can be a part of that. They can learn from, they can contribute to. And I think that's a really important part of it. But also the way that the material is distributed, the openness of it, right, generates this confidence for anyone who wants to inspect it. It's there. If you look, you know, in some cases, you can look at the names and go, yeah, these folks have been around. They have the experience. I can't do any better. I have confidence, right? There's no implication of perfection or mythical security, but there is what we're trying to generate is enough confidence for people to live their lives, right? To run their businesses, to deliver on their missions, and so forth. So I think this combination of both technical acumen, but also recognizing people are going to use it in these ways. Therefore, I want them involved. Does this allow, you know, can this be a useful data point for an auditor who's working under CMMC or working for an ISO-based evaluation or PCI or whatever, you know, the world that we live in? I don't know if you have any better data from at NIST than I do, Bob, but we did a survey several times years ago with company friends. And the survey was basically this: how many security frameworks do you either have to or choose to follow?
Yeah.
And here's the answer. The answer was either zero or significantly more than one, almost always significantly more. The zero ones, I always said, wow, you do have a framework. It's called ad hoc. I'm making it up as I go along, but that's an exception. But this idea, we've been eaten alive by frameworks, right? And you have to deal with them all. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
And I was just going to say, right, that like speaks, right? You may be an expert in 853 and understanding the Stiglitz, and Edward might be an ISO something, right? Again, the beauty of the project, we've done that translation of control to setting, right? The general Mac admin, the general person doesn't know what CM6 is, but they might know, right? Like, oh, I need to turn off AirDrop, and here it is. Yeah. And now they've met that, and they didn't have to understand these dozen security frameworks.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is in the project is that everything's tagged. So
right.
You can see, you know, okay, I just set the CIS benchmark. Why does it configure to the CIS controls or 853? Mm-hmm. You know, or you set, you know, the STIG and you want to see how it maps out to, you know, what is it, 7 different frameworks?
People can easily bring their proof, bring their receipts, right? I'm meeting 853 controls XYZ by just doing CIS benchmark when using the project.
That is so incredibly powerful, right? Because again, the way the industry developed, sort of everyone's left on their own to prove they've done the right thing, whatever that
right.
happens to mean in their context. And that's insane. You know, that's just tremendous amounts of repeat work.
Mm-hmm.
When the right place to solve that is up front, is to recognize the things you guys just described, which is, now, what are we trying to achieve here? We're trying to cut off this functionality because it's too dangerous. But that maps to lots of different individual technical items. And we need to show what that is. And we also need to map upwards to these larger frameworks. And you know, this is for CIS, Bob, just to share with you, this is a bedrock principle, right? We the purpose of those surveys was we want to recognize we live in this complicated world of multiple frameworks. And if we don't, we, the creators of such things, have a responsibility, that's my view, to make this survival in a multi-framework era easier for people, not more complicated, right? We all have to recognize we're not the only one in town. And so the more we can do up front to minimize this, to cross map, et cetera, then the better value that we can all provide. And that's, it's otherwise you have to either do it yourself or pay somebody to do it, or tie into a commercial service that will show cross mapping for you. And it's just, again, wasted work. But just a tremendous, I think, I love the philosophical advice behind all this. Edward, take me back to some of the experience that you have, though. If you were going to give advice to people on, okay, how to prepare yourself, the auditors are coming, what should they do with the CIS benchmark? For that part, if that's part of their enterprise, what's the prep work for that?
Well, the first thing I would tell people is actually read the benchmark. I say that and that sounds kind of, well, of course.
No, but, I know where you're going from.
It's not just a series of commands, both auditing and remediating. There's a reason why we do stuff, and we actually tell you why. And just because we tell you why you need to do something, if it has nothing to do with your business, you probably don't have to do that recommendation. If you had no internet connectivity whatsoever, then there's certain things you don't have to set. I don't know how that would happen, but you have to understand why. And we're going to tell you it in real language. It's not all super geek tech speak.
No, that rationale, right, is the key, right? So, mm-hmm. A progressive thinking auditor, and I can't claim that they all are, is looking at the circumstance the way you described it, right? Okay, so I have a benchmark, and that's important, provides lots of value. But now let's look at this one specific real-life case that I'm mm-hmm. looking over. And it has to do with, again, connectivity, mission criticality, where's the critical stuff stored? All that kind of stuff has to be accounted for. And it's perfectly rational to say, I love what CIS has had to say, but I chose not to follow their recommendation because. And if we provide the rationale, why did we recommend this be turned off, not on, or true, not false, or one, not 99, that allows them access to that expertise to say, oh, I get what they're trying to do, but in this particular case, it either doesn't apply to me, or I've done something else, compensating control, or whatever your language happens to be. And I think that's realistic, right? That allows people the flexibility. So there isn't one size fits all. But if you start from everyone is unique and completely different, it's massive work and paralysis. If you start from here's a baseline expectation, the community developed a piece of content that allows us, then you allow for adaptation for those that are either more face more risk, more sophisticated, more mature, whatever the model happens to be. But Bob, you must see this since you're involved in daily operations, this must be a life for you, right? How to adapt the benchmark and then explain it to someone else.
I wish people understood that the G and like STIG is not God's word, it's guidance, right?
gotcha. Okay.
Because right, like they think that they have to meet all of these. And we have in the project, we have benchmarks, which is CIS and the DISA STIG, right? You're supposed to meet these dozen controls with these values. And then we have baseline, the 853, which 853 is like choose your own adventure, right? Like you can meet as many as you want and whatever settings you want. I can't tell you the number of times we have had to help somebody because they just applied all of 853 and locked down their machine and it won't turn on now.
Self-denial of service attack.
Right. and we have to explain, right? Like this is the catalog of controls, not a recommended set. So yeah, it's definitely something. And even in just the operations, right? Like I don't have to meet all of the things that we set within the project because we have other things within NIST that do that.
Yeah, the term that we've been using at CIS is, we're not expecting perfection. We're looking for reasonable behavior. You've made reasonable choices. I've looked at the risk. I've looked at the cost. I've looked at, my particular set of circumstances. But if they don't have access to the rationale, then they're really going to struggle to explain to an auditor, to a boss, right, to a framework supervisor that they've behaved reasonably or rationally in that particular case. And I think it's just the work that you guys have put together here, both creates the content in a way that's really powerful, but also makes it accessible to people in a way that is supportive of the world that they have to operate in. So I think it's a great story. And so, you know, Jensen, in the interest of time here, I think we need to bring you back because there's a lot more to talk about in sort of kind of the application side and the feedback and, you know, the ongoing interaction between NIST and CIS and as part of this larger community. So if you're good with that, we'll have you come back another time. But let me offer you one last shot here. Any last thing you'd care to leave with the audience while we have their attention? Bob, I'll let you start. Just, you know, either emphasize something that came up or something that you want to tease for an episode.
Well, our biggest thing with the compliance project is actually, now that we're like 6 years into this, just about, this year we will be launching a sort of MSCP 2.0 with a bunch of changes of a more unified approach on the GitHub page. So yeah, keep up to date with that. And our hope is some interesting, maybe new features that to try to play this compliance sheet music. So everybody is playing the same, they have their different instruments and but they're all playing the same music.
Okay, good teaser. We'll explore that when we have you back sometime. Edward, any last thought you care to leave with the audience here?
Well, I guess I have to say, you know, community calls are 9 a.m. Eastern on Friday mornings. go to the Workbench page for the macOS community to get the call number and everything. I have to say that.
No, Edward, as we say at CIS, right, we are the hub of a community discussion. And you are, if you have insight to bring, come be a part of our community. You mentioned Workbench, our social media platform where all of our CIS discussions are managed. And it's also the workflow to create these products. So people are welcome to be a part of that. And to the audience, thank you for your time and attention. This has been a delightful discussion with a couple of interesting people, and I think a great illustration of what I just mentioned, right? Community behavior that leads to things that improve the community as a whole. So not just get together, hold hands and sing, but create. And you can be a part of that. You can benefit from that. But it's a really wonderful example we'll explore in a follow-on episode. So thanks for your time and attention. As always, please subscribe to us in the usual ways. We welcome your feedback. You can reach out to us. So we'll provide some show notes and opportunities for you to suggest topics, but also join us for this kind of topic and much more in the future. So thank you all very much. Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.